Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 610 for comics originally released on April 17th, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Naomi number 4. Now, we reviewed this on, I guess it would have been Weekly Comics Spotlight 598. Actually, you reviewed it, and I just made a couple of comments about it. I really didn't do a fair shake for this. I was not in the right frame of mind.
Understandable.
Yeah, it was literally right after my father died, and it was the first comic I read afterwards. So this was also one that I've put off rereading until now. So I read issues 1, 2, 3, and then 4 pretty much in rapid succession.
Oh, okay. And what'd you think?
The first issue still didn't work great for me. It worked better this time than the first time I read it.
Okay.
But it's very much Bendis at his kind of decompressed, and if you don't connect with the Naomi character, there's just not a whole lot of story there.
I could see that. I think I connected with the character a lot, and I've grown accustomed to reading Bendis through the years, his decompressed style, that it's an easy read for me. So out of the Wonder Comics, this has been my favorite title so far.
I would say all the Wonder Comics have been good.
Yes,
this,
I agree.
This one, I think, is the thinnest on overall plot. It's a character piece.
It is. It's completely a character piece. So,
And Naomi is kind of, sort of, but not totally obsessed with being adopted, wanting to feel special or whatever. And man, when I read that second issue and it ended on more or less the same note that the first issue ended on, like, man, is this ever going to go anywhere?
It's the same thing. Yeah, I see this as kind of like the comic that he's creating for his adopted daughters. I mean, you can completely see that. And the only reason why I know that is because I listened to Word Balloon, when he did the Bendis tapes or the Bendis files, whatever he calls them. And you hear Bendis talking about his adopted daughters, they're African-American. And so then you see why he does what he does when he was writing Ironheart over at Marvel and now creating this. I was like, I think he's really trying to create comics that speak to his kids.
And I respect that.
Yeah, so that's where I kind of like, if you don't have that background with him, though, I can see how this could be a little light, like you're saying.
And I didn't have that background.
Oh, okay.
I don't really follow all the backstory about the creators of the comics. I'm more interested in the story they're telling. But knowing that does inform the story, absolutely.
Yeah, and what's weird is I normally hate listening to interviews of comic creators. I know that's a horrible thing to say. I don't know why. It bores me to tears. But the only ones that I listened to at the very beginning were the Bendis files. And I listened to, it was something ridiculous, 14 hours of that stuff. Because they would just drone on for three-hour episodes. And that's where I picked up a lot of this stuff. And so having that background, I was like, oh, okay, now it makes sense to me. I'm like, here's why he's doing what he's doing.
Well, and if you're going to listen to comic interviews, Word Balloon's the place to go. I mean, Suntress is just a great interviewer and knows a lot of people and does some really good episodes.
I agree. So that's, if I'm going to listen to one, that's where I go.
I guess for me, I was expecting a little bit more plot in some of this, a little bit more, frankly, characterization.
Yeah.
It's very much on point with, what is her backstory and why is she special? And frankly, at the moment, I'm not totally convinced she is special, although at this point, she's starting to become special.
Yes, I know what you mean. And there was, I kind of read this and I was looking at it, and did it seem like a reverse Superman origin?
I wouldn't say necessarily a reverse Superman origin.
I mean, it's very similar, but what happened to who is different, but it's so similar.
Well, she was dropped off on Earth.
Not yes.
Rocketed to Earth. Her dad also happened to be essentially, it's funny because last issue, it was revealed that Dee, the mechanic, is a Thanagarian.
Yes.
That's Hawkman's race. And I'm like, man, this guy is really big and beefy. It's like, he doesn't look like a Thanagarian.
No, he looks like a bodybuilder.
Yeah. You said he's related to Bane. Okay, I can see that. But
yes.
Didn't go there. They had a reference to the gem world. Hadn't expected that, but okay. And then the reveal at the end of that led into this with her dad and his backstory. And I'm like, okay, he's got a spacesuit. I'm like, well, maybe he's from Ran. Because, well, it kind of looks like Adam Strange's spacesuit. And, you know, Thanagar and Ran, they tend to, you know, travel in the same circles. They may even be in the same system, depending which continuity you look at. And where in continuity, because one of the planets is moved at one point. Doesn't happen often, but, you know, hey. yeah, so when it turns out he is from Ran, I'm like, oh, I'm kind of figuring he can't possibly know Adam Strange. I mean, why would he? It's a big planet.
And he shouts out.
Turns out he does. They're best buds. Of course they are. But it has me wondering if the dad character showed up in the Ran Thanagar War miniseries, I don't know, a decade or so back. I'm guessing not, but okay, whatever. It's like, okay, we got a Thanagarian, we've got somebody from Ran, she's from wherever she's from, and it's like, it's interesting, some stuff's getting explained, but there's still plenty of questions.
Yeah, it's very decompressed because it seems like the origin for all three characters, the dad, the guy who works in the body shop, the Thanagarian, the daughter, or Naomi, it seems like it could have been done in one issue.
I don't know that I necessarily would have done it in one issue, but the fact that the entire plot, because I don't even think there are subplots to be had here, the entire plot is revolving around these origins, and we're four issues in, and I feel like we're really just getting teased on some of this.
Yeah, and the biggest tease is that last page, because you're like, okay, now I need to know what's going to happen, which is good or bad depending on your take on it, but I don't know what that meant. I could see the glow and I could see the eyes, and I don't know what that meant, but that may mean something to you.
It does.
Okay, that means something to you. Okay.
I could be wrong on what it means, but I thought it was interesting.
Yes.
And didn't really seem to connect to anything that had happened before in this series. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. I guess for me, you know, they were promising, you know, Naomi's connection to the great multiverse. I'm like, still waiting on that. I can see with this, maybe, okay, something's coming next issue. But four issues in, and I feel like we're always waiting to that next issue to get something.
Yeah, I agree. He's teasing and he's going in and out and playing a little bit loose, like, and playing coy with the characters and who they are. So I appreciate it, but at the same time, it can get frustrating because it's been four issues of what the heck's going on, what the heck's going on, what the heck's going on. So he needs to, at least by the end of this first arc, we need to know who all the characters are, and it needs to be heading into something big happening in the comic.
I would say it just needs to have something happen other than a girl wandering around town wondering, you know, is she adopted and who are her parents?
Something happening.
I mean, the saving grace is Bendis is a good writer. His stories are entertaining, even if they're crazy slow at times.
Yeah, like, it's slow, and yet I was completely engaged the whole time. I kept reading it. I was like, oh, this is cool. This is cool. But at the same time, like you said, the plot doesn't move forward. It's just all background. And it's a sign that he's a good writer that he can keep you somewhat engaged without a lot of stuff happening.
I think a lot of credit also goes to Jamal Campbell, the artist.
Oh, the art in here is amazing. And I love the artist. Everything in here, it's just eye-popping. The colors are great. Everything's so good. So that definitely helped with this book.
Yeah. There's also some places where they're playing with giving the sense of depth of field, and a few things are either out of focus or whatever intentionally and stuff. It's like, okay, that's a cool effect. It makes it feel a little more cinematic.
Yes, I would agree. So, I mean, some of the stuff was silly in there. Like you said, the Adam Strange thing. I want to know more about the Thanagarian. Why is he all jacked up? Is he on Bane juice? What's going on with him? But I want to know what's going to happen with the character, with that ending. Once again, another tease in there. But my when I was talking about the reverse Superman, it's not really the reverse of his origin. I was just saying, like, you know, when we have Superman, you had him coming as a baby from another planet, being adopted by humans. So now you have the dad coming from another planet.
Arguably,
adopting something else.
Naomi's come from another planet, gets adopted by, not in this case locals, but still small town America people.
Yeah, that's true.
I see what you're coming from, though, with the dad almost being the inverse in such.
Yeah, the dad's like the inverse of it, so it's just kind of funny. I was like, is he trying to do a reverse Superman with him?
I just want to know what his name was on Ran, because Adam Strange, is this Joe Normal?
Yeah, it probably is.
So, I mean, this is good stuff. I think Bendis has clearly seems to have a plan for Wonder Comics.
Yes.
Because Gemworld is mentioned here. We've got Amethyst to the Gemworld over in Young Justice.
Exactly. So they're tying in.
Ginny Hex apparently was introduced in the Superman Giants in the story he did over there. She's a member of Young Justice. Haven't figured out if Wonder Twins or Dial H is going to tie into all of this stuff, but he has referenced the Wonder Twins over in one of the Superman books recently.
Yep.
I forget whichever one's doing the Leviathan stuff. I guess that's Action.
Yeah, Action, correct.
So he's trying to get some continuity going and whatnot. I respect that. I like that. He's doing a good job. It's an entertaining story, but if you can't connect with this character, there's nothing here for you.
I would agree. And I guess the reason why it clicked with me is because I listened to those Bendis tapes. If I didn't, this probably wouldn't work for me. So that's the only thing I think that connected me to the story. One thing I was going to ask you, do you, by the look of the characters when she appears on the planet, Naomi, do you know where these people are from? You don't have to say where they're from if you know, but I'm like, who are these people?
When they're kind of coming through that gate or whatever?
Yeah, the rift. It's a big two-page splash, and I was just like, I have no clue who these people are, but I didn't know if maybe by the way they're dressed or anything, if you maybe knew who they were.
Not blatantly obvious, no. There's a few things that remind me a little of a couple of characters or whatnot, but some of the signature look of it is, I mean, it's not identical to these other places, I'm thinking.
Okay. Just with that two-page splash, I'm figured it's either, you know, fill in space, decompressing a la Bendis, what he does, or maybe that was supposed to mean something and it just didn't land on me because I don't know who in the heck a lot of the people in the DCU are. So I was like, I don't know if this is telling me where she's from or who she is, but I didn't, you know, just didn't do anything for me.
Well, there's aspects, like the headdress of one of them, that kind of reminds me of like a Star Sapphire kind of a look.
Okay.
There's also a little bit of the design that's a little Dark Star-ish, but very clearly not Dark Star.
Yeah, so maybe we'll find out who in the heck these people are, or where. Maybe that's where she's from. Who knows?
It's funny because one of them appears to have a shield and is wearing a mask, which almost gives a Captain America riff kind of a thing, but that's clearly not the case because that's Marvel.
Yeah. Hey, blonde hair too.
Yeah, yeah. So no, I have absolutely no idea where these are coming from. And granted, I've only been reading DC for about half the length of DC.
So if you don't know, it's probably something that they're creating or he's creating new.
I'm assuming it's new, but he's at least trying to tie it into Ran, Thanagar, Gemworld, and some other stuff. And again, I like that.
Yeah, me too. I like it, and I think he's going somewhere with it. I just don't know where. And I still, although I like the character, I still don't know what she does, and I still don't know why she matters. I mean, I hate to say that, you know, you don't want to say, but I don't know why she matters in the DCU still.
At this point, she doesn't matter in the DCU.
She doesn't. She's just like a girl. And I'm like, okay, but maybe he's making a normal girl for his daughters, which I'm like, okay, that's fine, but it has to do something or it will lose me eventually.
It's got to, I don't want to say pick up the pace, but I mean, a lot's going on. It just isn't relevant. There's no context. Why should we care about her?
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, she's interesting-ish enough, but I feel I'm again, four issues in, and if she has powers, I've got no earthly idea what they are, because she has no earthly idea that she even has powers, if she has powers.
True. Well, the cover of this comic is the origin of, so we see her origin coming to Earth, and then the last page it says, next, Naomi revealed. So he's telling me he's going to say who she is and what she's doing. So if he doesn't, I'm not going to be happy.
Well, they've been saying that sort of a thing the whole time.
Exactly.
I've got an inkling, and if it's kind of what I'm thinking, it could be a really big deal.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool.
Don't know if it's going to be what I'm thinking.
All right. Well, you'll have to tell me after we're done recording.
After we're done recording.
All right. Remind me. Well, tell me who you think it is.
Okay. So for me, I'm going to go with a B- on this. It's good. It's decompressed. It is an entertaining read because it's great art and Bendis is a solid storyteller. But if you're thinking it's, you know, a big reveal about the meta arc at DC or even Bendis's arc within DC or, something like that, that it's just, you know, tons of plot and action and stuff. There's not.
Definitely not. And for me, I'm going to preface my score. I'm going to have to explain it. With me, I think if you don't know the background of the writer, this is B-minus, B-max score. With me, knowing the background, I went with a B-plus just because I was like, I see what he's doing. And I was like, okay, that's cool. But if you don't have that frame of reference, it's not going to land for you. So I went with a B-plus, but that's a very big caveat in my score is, do you have that background?
Oh, and I think it's relevant because without having it, one, I don't have the context of why this would be a bit of a personal story for him in some way, shape, or form. It would also almost come across potentially as inauthentic of what does a guy like Bendis know about a young female African-American, you know, experience in a small town or whatever.
Exactly. You would be going, why does he keep on writing about young African-American girls? You know, what's going on with this guy? But knowing that he's adopted two daughters and knowing that he'd spoken on, you know, word balloon saying, hey, I want to, you know, write comics for my daughter, my kids will like, and I'm like, oh, okay, now it's making sense why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, well, and I think that as a population, both in America and just the global audience and stuff, there's a lot of diversity that is not represented in comics and should be, but when it, at times it's gotten to the point where let's take any character and, man, they can't be a white male.
Yeah, and yeah, like, that does happen sometimes.
I'm a white male. I can kind of relate to them sometimes. So sometimes it's taken too far. At least here, it's a brand new character, and it's not like they're almost tokenizing or ethnicizing an existing character in some way, shape, or form, which I think is a bad idea. But I certainly think there ought to be characters of every size, shape, ethnicity, etc., to where every kid growing up has somebody they can look to and say, "Wow, that's like me. That's a cool character and can be a hero or whatever."
I agree with everything you said. Like, I appreciate Ms. Marvel, even though the name was recycled, was a completely new character. You know, so now we have a Muslim American, you know, Pakistani American hero. I like seeing that, but I agree with you though. Like, make some characters, even new characters that speak to maybe you or me, because, we're still here. So but I agree. I know exactly what you're saying. And I don't like the change, like with the Iceman thing. You know, don't take a character and just totally change their whole back history and story and say none of it existed. Create a new character and do this new cool thing, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, yeah. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, sounds good.
This is Avengers No Road Home number 10. This ends the weekly arc they've been doing for 10 weeks now.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying the story overall, but man, it is just not as good as No Surrender.
I agree with you on that. It's the same writers, but yeah, the first story was way better, the first weekly story, than this one. Yeah.
It felt a lot more epic because it involved a lot more, it involved just about every Avenger. You know, yeah. They introduced Voyager. I thought that was interesting and stuff. This has been good, but for me, I'm not really liking, and I think I said this when we talked about, I guess, the first issue. The villain and stuff, not really clicking with me. And it's a subset of Avengers. I mean, you've got Vision and Scarlet Witch. So you've got some classic Avengers.
And then you have Hercules. And
Hercules is a kind of Avenger.
Yeah, kind of Avenger comes along. You have Hawkeye.
Hawkeye in Spectrum or Photon or Captain Marvel, whatever Monica Rambeau is going by this week. Those are our core, you know, former chairman of the Avengers. So they're key players.
Yeah, but you, when you have Rocket Raccoon, he doesn't really feel very Avengery.
He's not.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even consider him an Avenger after this story.
And the one who's definitely not an Avenger who is labeled under Avengers, Conan the Barbarian.
He's going to quickly become one with Savage Avengers or whatever coming out.
Yes.
I'm sorry. This is one of those, you know, you got your chocolate and my peanut butter kind of situations here.
Yeah.
I got nothing against Conan, but I got no need to see him in an Avenger story.
Well, that's a thing. I like Conan for Conan. I don't see the necessity of bringing him into the Marvel universe, the 616. I don't think he belongs there other than maybe in a what-if story, honestly, because I want to see Conan in Conan's world doing Conan stuff. I don't want to see him fighting the Scarlet Witch with hex powers. That makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just like, and I'm a Conan fan. I love Conan. So I'm like, that just doesn't do it for me.
I'll be honest. I'm sitting out Savage Avengers.
I figure you would, and me, I'm buying it just because I love Conan, but I got to see what's going to happen with it, because it could either be interesting or it's going to just completely bomb.
It could be somewhere in between. I mean, for me, it's not just the Conan thing. I wouldn't have ruled something out if it was an otherwise great lineup of Avengers. It just wasn't an otherwise great lineup of Avengers. To me, it's another riff on Dark Avengers or Thunderbolts.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, I mean, now this comic, when it started, remember last week, I'm trying to remember what it was we reviewed, and we said it was very meta when they showed the pencil kind of fading away.
That was the Justice League 2 weeks ago.
Justice League, yes. Okay, that was 2 weeks ago, yeah. Did this comic not feel completely meta throughout large chunks of it?
Well, you know, it's funny because it, at one point, well, first off, it starts out very meta.
Yes.
With some good art, though. But I got to give the writers, I guess, credit for finding a story reason for tons of pinups.
Yeah, it was lots of pinups.
Because I would say it was almost as much or more pinups of one shape or form than just regular narrative. I mean, the pinups are used in a narrative format, but it didn't make for the most satisfying of stories. No. There was an aspect of it that also reminded me of another major Avengers storyline. I don't really want to say which one, because cryptic though it may spoil it for a few people who would actually catch the reference and say, oh, that's what they're doing. There was some interesting stuff here, but yeah, there got to a point where it was incredibly meta when it was referring to the House of Ideas, the fantastic, the astonishing, the amazing. I mean, these are, you know, effectively trademarked adjectives over at Marvel and stuff. And there were probably a half dozen more they could have used, you know, uncanny, mighty.
Exactly.
So, you know, invincible. And it was some good art, but as far as the story goes,
It was very weird because it read, although it was a thick book, it read very quickly, and I felt like the story was good. It was not nearly as good as the first weekly Avengers series we had.
Yeah.
But it was good, and then I felt like they really didn't stick the landing, and I really did not like the idea that they came up with.
Yeah, again, there were aspects that reminded me of a classic Avengers storyline.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know at least one of the writers has had to have read that, period. Guaranteed, I can't imagine him not. But, I mean, Mark Waid's a trivia expert. I think there's probably no comic he hasn't read at Marvel and DC. It didn't totally fumble the landing, but there was a depowering of one Avenger that, kind of surprising and not, because they'd sort of amped up the powers in the storyline, so scaling it back kind of made sense. Mm-hmm. There was a final page giving one Avenger kind of a new look. It's like, I don't know if I like it or not. I'd like to see him actually, I don't know, use it a bit. But
yeah, I did not like the new look.
It felt out of the blue versus like a clear outcome of the storyline.
Exactly. I was like, why is it this? I was like, okay, that's weird. And then they essentially, I guess some of the big stuff that happened near the beginning of this, I guess it was the first issue, there's a complete reset of it.
Yeah, there's a reset of a couple of things, and one of the things that I really enjoyed about this series was the interplay between the Hulk and Hawkeye.
Yes.
And I knew going into this I wasn't going to get good payoff on that.
Yeah, that kind of went nowhere. So it's weird because it's so hard to talk about this issue without spoiling it. So it's like, it's very weird. I feel like they stuck Conan in the only part of the Marvel Universe or the 616 where it makes sense. It felt like they did all this stuff just to reset it, and at the end, the only payoff was Conan was brought in and somebody got a new suit. That's the way I saw it.
Pretty much. I would agree with that. It didn't seem to have the epicness or the impact that No Surrender had. It was enjoyable-ish enough.
Yeah, it
was a good issue. I mean, the art was fine and really good in some places.
Yeah, this was not a bad read, or it wasn't horrible. This whole series was not bad at all. I hate to make it sound like that.
But I think they had a high bar set by the previous weekly run they did, and they didn't get to that height.
I would agree. And that's what's tough. When they all came together, I was so excited because I liked the other series so much. And this one, although good, it's just it wasn't there. You know, like, basically, you know, they scored a 10 out of 10, and now you're looking at something decent, like maybe a 7 out of 10 or a 7.5 out of 10. But when you're comparing them, it's like, oh, that one's really a dud when you put them side by side. Even though it's not bad.
I just think they did a lot more actually happened and changed in No Surrender than in No Road Home.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I was missing. And I guess the only thing I can say about that is they might have been limited in what they could do. And I hate to say that, but with War of the Realms going on and Avengers going into that, that maybe they couldn't play with the key characters, because you'll see a lot of the big, you know, like Cap, Thor.
Fine,
you know,
they can't use the A-list, but the Avenger roster goes deep.
Yeah, so I think, and maybe they couldn't make them make too many changes. I don't know. Maybe that's an editorial thing. I just don't know. But it did feel like they were building up to something, and I was like, okay, it just kind of fizzled out. And I don't know if we will see the new baddie in the Marvel Universe again, Nyx. I just don't know.
I'm okay if we don't.
Yeah. Hey, when she went out, did you like the with the way that she kind of disappeared a little bit in there? Did you like how they went back to early Marvel with that, or no?
I don't know. I mean, some of this stuff.
There's a lot of callbacks. It's just pinups.
The pinups were nice, but
there was so much 80th anniversary in here. It felt like, hey, let's take care of the baddie with an 80th anniversary thing picture.
Well, it's like Old Home Week in a story called No Road Home.
Yeah,
doesn't work.
I got to that page and I was like, wow, this is very golden agey.
And to me, that's something that if they really wanted to celebrate, you know, how long Marvel's been going and really celebrate the Avengers in that way, they needed to do something more along the lines of like Avengers Forever.
Yeah, I would agree. The only thing that I could see is some type of big repercussion from the story, which I don't think there's going to be a big repercussion, even with the new suit and even with Conan coming over. I think it'll be limited and then he'll go back to Hyboria, you know, is when you get to that page where you're looking at kind of like the resetting of what happened in the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious how much they're going to do with the like a rebirth of things there, or if that's going to completely change that because of the look and everything. I don't think so, but maybe something there.
I don't know. I'm going to be surprised if there's any significant repercussions at all out of this.
That's what I'm guessing. I'm in full agreement with you there, because one thing with an event, you know, like you get event fatigue when they do event. This is an event. I don't know if you call this an event, but I would. That it kind of burns you a little bit because nothing happened. You come out without the payoff.
I do not consider this an event.
Okay, you consider a story, not an event. Okay.
I mean, to me, in an event in the classic sense, going back all the way to the first one at Marvel, which was Contest of Champions and
yep.
Crisis on Infinite Earths, or even any of the JLA-JSA kind of crossovers and such, it's something that, less so with the JLA-JSA crossovers, more so with Crisis on Infinite Earths and Contest of Champions, epic in scope. If you're anybody that's anybody, you're involved.
Okay, yeah, and that's not this. This is very limited in scope. It's a small team.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, you know, when they've got the Oscars, the Emmys, and everybody in Hollywood's there kind of a thing.
That's an event.
Yeah, that's an event. It's noticeable if you're not there.
Yep.
You know? So this is a major Avenger storyline, certainly. Well, it's an Avenger storyline. We could argue if it's major or not. So there's that. But it just... It's funny because it didn't even seem as big of an Avengers storyline as No Surrender or Avengers Forever or some other classic storylines.
Yeah, it felt very... It was a decent story, but just not impactful. That's the way I could describe it, the best way.
Yeah, I mean, this was a good issue. I mean, the art was good, the characterization was fine, they did some interesting things. It certainly wasn't the least bit bad. I would say it was well above average, but did they really land the ending? And is this something where I'm going to tell somebody, gosh, you've got to go pick up that trade? No. No Surrender, yeah, pick up that trade. This one, it's worth reading, but it's not you've got to pick it up.
Definitely. If you have Marvel Unlimited, but you don't need to go out and spend a lot of money if you're like, can I really afford this? It's probably one you can skip, and it won't really affect your reading of the, you know, the 616 at all.
There are a lot of things that I think are kind of, if you're building up a comic book library, ought to go in there, and you should get around to reading them at some point. This is not one of those must-haves.
Definitely. I would agree with that. So, a little bit disappointing. That being said, I would not mind to see the band get back together again with a more impactful story. You know, loosen up the reins a little bit and tell them they can change something and make something happen.
Yeah, I would want them, if they do this again, to have a, I'm trying to think how to phrase this, a major storyline of some sort.
Yeah, like I would like to see them write something that almost eventish. I could see the team do that because they seem to get along together well. They work together. They vibe off each other. They have good ideas together, and they're able to do a weekly book together. They proved it twice. So you could have these writers, you know, with some decent artists, come out with a real impactful event, and I think they come up with some cool ideas.
I want something that is iconically Avengers and not a storyline that you could have kind of done with, you know, the X-Men or the Justice League or you know, hero team du jour.
Yeah.
Something that personifies what it means to be an Avengers and what the Avengers are all about in a unique way, which I felt
that would be cool.
Kind of sort of did in No Surrender.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I actually, you know, talking more about it, I want to go back and read No Surrender again.
I think it would be interesting to have something that is almost a tag team Avenger setup where, I don't know, they've got to go to the negative zone. They got to go somewhere that they just can't stay.
Yeah.
So they have five, maybe six people that they can have at any one point, and they literally have to tag in and out.
That would be really cool.
Almost do a riff on the whole Marvel Captain Marvel with the Negabands or something like that. They only have so many pairs, you know, and they can move them around, though.
Yeah,
so,
tag in, tag out.
Constantly switching up the character dynamics.
Exactly, based on the enemy or the situation that they happen to be in.
Do you leave Cap in the team all the whole time, or is he the one calling who goes next?
Exactly. And do you need the heavy hitter being a Hulk or a Hercules? Or do you need someone who's more skillful, maybe?
Or do you have timed switches to where you're going from offense to defense on the turn of a dime or something?
Which would change up the characters, yes. That would be very cool. All right, John, write that story for us.
Nah, I need somebody smarter than me. Wade would be a good choice, just saying.
He would. Hey, let's submit this thing to Marvel. No, then they'll never write it.
So, you know, all of that having been said, I did enjoy this issue. I did enjoy this story. It resolved the story. I just didn't think it was as impactful or great of a story as I would have liked for it to have been. But it did have some really fun moments here and there. So I'm going to go with a B on this. I think your mileage may vary. And again, it's one that I think is a good read. It's just not one that I could say, oh, yeah, you've got to go rush out and go get this. It's a qualifier.
Yeah.
B, I guess.
I would agree with you on that. I would say that this series, this 10-issue run, it's had better issues than this. So this was, in my opinion, a little bit weaker of an issue. I did like the series, not as good as the previous one, but I went with the B- and thought it was good, and good enough that I really want to see these writers get back together again with another Avengers story with a little more impact.
How long would you have that run?
I would say I would like to see it run a little bit longer, maybe something like 12 to 18.
I was going to say 12 issues, I think, is the sweet spot.
12 would be really good, and it'd be perfect for a trade paperback, too. They could break it into two or one big oversized thing, but 12 would be really nice.
It gives them some time to get up to some steam in the story and stuff without it feeling like it's taking forever or it's too rushed.
Yeah, they've been sticking with the 10, and it's worked, but 12 would be a little bit better, I think.
They did 16 for No Surrender.
Oh, that's true. That's true. It was longer.
Yeah. I think it's got to be determined by how big of a story they've got. But I want something that really dives into the past, present, and potential future of the Avengers and really, again, celebrates the team.
Yeah, and this I want to see done again. I know they had a DC. They had a bunch of writers get together to write, but they kind of broke off and did their own thing. I like to see this collaborative writer when you have really good writers come together and what they come up with is better than maybe what they would have done on their own. And I like that. It's just something I enjoy.
Well, and we've seen that done well at DC with things like 52 and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. That's the type. I really enjoy those stories. I just like to see them.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our other book?
Sounds good.
This is Port of Earth number 9 from Image Comics. And this is an interesting series. I've really been enjoying this. It's a fun kind of political business PR kind of a spin that this series has that makes it, I think, fairly unique. It typically starts out with like a TV news interview kind of thing, like a 60 minutes kind of a piece. They talk about some stuff, give a little bit of color style and whatnot, and then you kind of flip to a regular narrative that shows those events of the past unfolding or whatever. It's arguably formulaic, but man, it works great, and I think this would make a really fun TV series.
That's just what I was thinking. I feel like I could watch this as a TV show, and I would really love it. Like you said, there's politics involved, there's business involved, there's consortiums. This whole thing has just been captivating, while at the same time you think, man, it should be boring. It's not. It's not boring at all. It's written very well. And if they did a TV series, I know I'd be hooked.
Oh, yeah. Well, like when we have, they start with the interview of the New Earth Consortium liaison, Rogoro. How would you pronounce that? Rogoro.
Rogoro, yeah.
Rogoro. We'll go with that. I would pronounce it wrong. That much is certain. It's funny because he's clearly alien, but he's also surprisingly human at times. There's some snark. There's some condescension. There's the political savviness.
Yes.
And it's like, he's alien. How can they understand us so well? And they do. You know, there's a fun dynamic there that I'd like to see more of, both here and in other books.
Exactly. And there's hints that are placed in the story, things that haven't been told to the reader outright, but you can see the stuff percolating up from the outside. The consortium maybe is doing more than the humans know. You know, people are getting fed up with aliens being on the planet and using our resources and almost outside of the control of our governments, you know?
I wouldn't say almost.
Yeah, completely. Completely out of the control. So it's very weird. You know, you get technology from these people. You're giving gifts. All they want to do is stop and get some water. But at the same time, there's a lot of negativity that comes along with that.
The company, a TV production studio I'd like to see do this is the one that did Stargate SG-1.
That would be cool.
Because they can do present-day sci-fi really well. There's an aspect of this port of Earth that it's similar yet different from the Atlantis station and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And they had a sense of humor about it that I think would really work with this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they could do this series justice.
I would agree with you there. And I'm liking how we're seeing different things, the impacts of the aliens being on the planet. You know, of course, you know, like maybe viruses that come from outer space that we're not, you know, immune to. And can that be treated? Can it? Yes or no. Can it be leveraged? Yes or no. I really love that. It's even something like that. A virus can be political.
Oh, it absolutely can be. And I think it clearly in some cases here was.
Yes. That's where I'm just like, it keeps gripping you every page. I'm like, man, this is good. This is good.
There's an aspect where these aliens seem to be clearly toying with the human race.
Yeah. And when you first read this, the very first issue, because you've been on since the beginning, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah.
When I was reading, I was like, okay, this is cool. And I thought they were just taking a almost like a police cop drama. You know,
it did look like that at the first, yes.
But now I realize it's a much bigger plot than that. That was just the first intro to what's really going on.
Well, and at first I thought the interview stuff was just a way to get some exposition out there. And
yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it is. But I think this one really showed how much you can do beyond just exposition in that kind of a setup.
I would agree with you there. So, I mean, this book is one of the few that, you know, a lot of times with the first issue, you get hooked on something and then the story kind of gets muddled down and the writers get lost in the middle and then it wraps up eventually. And maybe it's good or bad, you know, 20, 30 issues down the road. This one has been good from beginning till now, and it seems like it's picking up pace and getting better and better as it goes.
Yeah, I think it's improving as it goes. There were some things here that I think somebody could miss if they're not paying attention, but it's like, oh, well, that seems to clearly be going on, and they've pretty much said it without saying it.
Yeah, you know? That's what I love. They say things without saying it, so they treat you have to be an intelligent reader, and they treat you like you're intelligent. Hey, I figured this out. This is mm-hmm. cool. He's toying with you.
Yeah. I'm curious what the end game in mind is, both for the series and what the characters in the series are kind of thinking their individual end games are.
I agree too, and I hope Zach Kaplan has a long game plan for this because I could keep on reading it. I love it. I know he's writing over at DC. I can't remember what he's writing, but he's like a co-writer on a book right now. I think it may be Nightwing. Honestly, I can't remember.
It might be. I'm not sure. And doesn't he also do stuff on TV?
I honestly don't know, but I think I just saw him on DC book, and it might have been Nightwing. So I'll just have to look next time I'm reading it.
I'd like to see this turned into a TV show, because I think there's a ton that could be done with the concept, and I think that it now would be a good time for it. I think there's enough of the political bent to it and, you know, perception versus reality type stuff that in this day and age could play really well.
I think this would play really well because things like politics and the political gamesmanship and the intrigue and the backstabbing and everything that comes along with that, it seems like things that tie into that are really booming and really popular now. Game of Thrones has a lot of political intrigue, very popular. You have this, which is so captivating as a comic. One of my favorite TV series on right now that I'm watching on Showtime is a show called Billions. And it's about, you know, billionaire runs a hedge fund, just, you know, the underhand deals and what goes on, you know, for stuff to play out in a certain way. And it's just so riveting and it keeps you captivated every single episode. I just can't get enough.
This is one of those that I think is fallen under people's radar and is really a good, solid read. The basic premise is aliens negotiate with Earth and set up a port on Earth so they can get some, I think they wanted water.
Yeah, you know? Water.
But we get some other technology and some benefits out of this, and it turns out maybe this wasn't such a good deal for us.
Yes.
You know?
And one thing I would say about this, though, that is really nice, if you have never read Port of Earth, you don't have to read it. You can pick up this issue, and he literally gives you a recap on that first page.
Yeah.
It's not like a recap, like, you know, column of stuff. In the story, he recaps it very nicely for you where it'll make sense. Boom, you're in.
There's an aspect of accessibility that I really respect. That having been said, if you're interested in this, we're on issue 9. Get the two trades or the first two arcs and catch up here. You know what I mean? It's easy to get into.
You owe it to yourself to read it because it's really good material.
Yeah. I think it you don't have to. You can sample the current issue, and if you like it, I don't think it ruins previous issues either.
Yeah. Hey, and if we didn't sell you enough, there's a guy in here who talks like Yoda from Star Wars.
Kinda.
Kinda. I was reading that. I was like, what is this? Some kind of Yoda ripoff?
Well, there's only so many ways an alien can talk, I guess.
It's true. I was kind of laughing with that.
I do think if they did this as a TV series, the effects group would have some fun.
Me too. So please, please, please make a TV show out of this. I would be so happy.
Yeah, I'd really enjoy that. I think it'd do well.
Me too.
I'm going to go with an A- on this. I think it's a ton of fun, and I recommend it.
Yeah, I recommend it too. Recommend it highly, and I went with an A. I love this series, and it's one of the few series that's been getting better as it goes.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I think it, like I said, it's falling under people's radar, and I really don't think that it should. And I'll admit, it's not one of those that if you had said, oh, it's one of the best books out there, I don't know that it would have popped in my mind to say, oh, this is one of them.
It's true. It's kind of quiet, and I remember the first arc when it was almost like a police procedural with some aliens. I was like, okay, it's cops with aliens, and it was good, but it wasn't like, wow. And it seemed like last arc, it got a little bit better. And then this arc, with the way it started, I'm like, wow, this is really good. It's getting better.
Yeah, I do think this is probably the best issue of the run so far, but I'd have to reread them to confirm that.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool seeing Zach Kaplan. He's becoming a better writer, I think, as he's, I guess it's been over a year now that he's been writing this.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, so we've gotten to see him grow. So I'm happy.
Yeah, it's cool.
So before I get into the chat, I was going to talk with you about some stuff that they were talking about on the Slack channel. Some people were kind of talking about it. I told them I'd bring it up to you tonight while we're recording. What's been going on with you? Made progress with your reading?
Anything? I have made some progress on my reading.
Okay. Are you caught up?
I am caught up.
Congratulations. I'm giving you a round of applause. I don't know if you can hear it.
I can. Okay. Read, how many things did I read this week? I read, I don't know, 45 comics or whatever I had stacked up thereabouts.
Cool. And you've only been getting about 25 a week, right?
Give or take. Some weeks it's like 17. This next week, I think it's around 26 or something. So, yeah, about two dozen or so, a little under. 1.5 to 2 dozen comics, sometimes a little higher, but not often.
So now that you're caught up, you could add a few things in if you want to, or you can get caught up on that huge trade stack you have.
I could do that. I've also got a series of books here on creating comics, and I've got a few other projects I want to kind of start tackling and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
And again, I've got a ton of other things for back issue spotlights.
Ah, so we might get some new back issue spotlights coming up.
We might. We might.
Cool.
My plan is to stay current, obviously, and I'm going to have a little bit of time after Comic-Con when my sister's unavailable that may be good for doing some back issue spotlights and stuff then, too.
Okay, cool, cool. So, when is Comic-Con this year?
It is July, I want to say 17th to 21st.
So we might get some back issue spotlights in August.
Probably get them recorded in August. They may not go up until September, October, depending on other stuff.
Ah, cool, cool.
I almost want to focus a little more on the reading and the recording at that point than the edit as fast as I can kind of thing.
Yeah, I've just realized, you know, I think Drew and I were joking about it in like a private message. He's like, podcast, you know, so time consuming. I was just like, man, it feels time consuming for me. And all I'm doing is talking, you know, for one a week. I can't imagine doing the amount of podcasts you do.
It takes some time. It's parts of it are fun to do. Parts of it, like the editing, kind of suck. I'll admit to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, and, you know, sometimes they go short. I've got a few episodes that I recorded this past weekend that I would consider short. But we talked to my sister and I about what we had to say about a couple of TV shows, and it just wasn't all that much. I think it was a good conversation, but it was condensed. Versus, say, the Power Morphicon one, where we actually talked for, I thought, surprisingly long for a short, small convention. But I thought it was a good conversation, too.
It was. That was a long conversation, but it was good.
Yeah. So, you know, it takes some time to obviously record the episodes, some time to edit them, get them up, and some episodes take more prep time than others.
Cool.
And that's, to me, one of the challenges with the back issue spotlight, doing, you know, anywhere from 6 to 12 issues worth of comics or whatnot for an episode. It takes some time.
Well, I know, because we've done some monster marathons when vacations line up, and when we have to review 6 or 9 comics, oh my gosh, I feel so fatigued after that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're both spent. We're like, we don't want to talk anymore. See you in a month. I'm done.
It's one of those things that just doing that many back-to-back, it is tiring. It may not sound like it's that, you're just talking about comics. Well, yeah. But, I mean, for me, keeping that much in my brain at once as to, well, what did I read? You know,
that's true.
It can get a little hard.
You try to keep the energy level up, so when you're so energetic for like 2.5 or 3 hours, at the end you're like, okay, I'm not used to acting like this.
Well, and I think that's part of why some of the like the two TV ones my sister and I did, I think we were just kind of tired that night.
Yeah, yeah. It happens. Hey, so the Slack channel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the people are talking about it. There was a basically a post on Bleeding Cool. It's saying, will 25 cents a page be the new norm for Marvel Comics? So basically, he was going into the new War of the Realms. The first issue was $5.99. for a 31-page story, which is 19 cents a page. War of the Realms number 2, $4.99 for a 20-page story, or basically 25 cents a page, which is a normal-sized comic, $5. Now, I thought DC was doing that too with the Batman Who Laughs, but I looked it up, and they're actually doing like 31 or 32 pages for the $5. But they're concerned that, like, hey, this is being tested at an event. Are comics getting ready to jump up to $5 an issue? What are your thoughts?
I think if it's going to happen, first off, eventually it'll happen.
It's going to happen. It has to. Inflation.
It sucks, but it will. I think it'll happen at Marvel before DC.
I agree.
It'll probably be commonplace at Marvel before we see too much of it at DC. They tend to be a lot better on the price point. I think it's not a good thing. I don't know. I think prices for comics are a bit of a quandary right now, because it used to be that the big expense was printing. But
yes,
you could leverage that over, you know, 100,000 print run, or 250,000, you know, whatever. So on a per item basis, the creative costs weren't that big of a deal. That's why they could do stuff for, you know, 35 cents or whatever back then. Cost of living goes up, wages go up, content creation costs go up, print runs go down, so printing goes up. And printing is a major cost. I'm not trying to suggest it's not, but I don't think it is the biggest aspect of the cost that's the problem. I still think it's creative costs, but there comes a point where if I were looking at a comic and if it were the exact same comic, you know, say any one of the ones we read this week, and it's $2.99 or $3.99 or $4.99 or $5.99 it's offered at. Most of these at $2.99, yeah, I'd get, no problem. $3.99, yeah. Well, I did get them. $4.99, I'm going to think a little harder. $5.99, definitely going to give some second thought.
Yeah, and the weirdest thing is, I know the bulk of people still shop at LCS's local comic shops.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is good, you know, small business, local community, they pay taxes there, everything like that. I could read half as much as I do if I didn't buy from Eric with Cowabunga Comics.
Yeah.
So Eric with his discounts keeps me in the game. So if comics go to $5, essentially I'll be paying $2.50, which is kind of what I was paying way back in the day. I remember when I would pay $2.50 on comics, you know. But if it starts going to like $3-4 with the discount, I don't think the local comic shops will be in business. I think they'll be gone. You'll have to, the discounters are buying through Diamond will be the only way to go. That'll be the only market there is.
I think it comes down to story quality and page count. There's nothing inherently wrong with a $5.99 price point. It's if you don't feel you're getting the value for that, that's the problem.
Yeah, because 20 pages, $5, that is kind of pricey. I mean, they go into the story, they're talking about, you know, inflation, what it was then, and, you know, minimum wage, what it was then. And then they said, oh, it's been a 1,700% increase since 1974 in comics. But, I mean, some of that was, you know, they paid people nothing back in the day. Now you have creators making six figures.
Well, and some of these creators deserve certainly the money they're getting and such. But
yeah,
while there's inflation on there, I think there's almost deflation in story content.
Yeah.
If I had read that second issue of Naomi with a, am I going to keep getting this book or not, as it was coming out mindset, which obviously I didn't, I waited a couple of months, and I got to that second cliffhanger that was pretty much the same as the first.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I paid another $3.99 for this? Or if it had been $4.99, certainly if it had been $5.99, it's like, not no thanks. It.
Yeah, and the flip side of that, the complete opposite, is like, I'm going to pick a Nick Spencer for with Amazing Spider-Man. I feel like Nick gives you as much story as he can in every issue. He puts a lot of words in there. I mean, not just being overly verbose. But he gives you a lot of content with every book. Whereas Bendis, that decompressed style, he's like, oh, I can write seven titles, but you're not really getting seven titles worth of material when you're reading those seven books.
Well, and I think story content is a little hard to measure.
Yes.
Because it's not words on a page. Because, I mean, Bendis can put a lot of words on a page. It doesn't mean much happens.
Yeah, he'll have a words all over the page with two people just sitting on a bed saying absolutely nothing. Just small talk. I'm like, all right, I don't want to read this. I'm going to skip this page.
It's how many story beats are there? How much is actually kind of happening that matters? And it's a little nebulous to define, but I think if you really want to understand that, I would say pick up Love and Capes by Tom Zoller.
And I have those. I have not read them yet, though.
Any back issue of them.
Okay.
Because every one of them is accessible and gives you, I think, at least two or three times as much content as your average comic.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. And the price is not bad on those.
Oh, no. The guy knows how to write comics. He knows how to draw them. He's got a style not everybody may love or whatever. I think it's great. Kind of an anime, or not anime, but an animated style, kind of almost a Bruce Timm sort of a thing. But there's an aspect of, he's able to tell a story that has enough story momentum and enough depth that on a quarterly basis, I found it more accessible than some books that were coming out biweekly.
Very true. I never had read the guy until you and Drew reviewed, I think it was Time and Vine.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, by then the second or third issue was out, you know, I waited and I bought the trade and I was like, wow, this is so good. Like you said, the art was not my favorite art, but it was so good.
Funny story with that. That was one that Drew and I did ahead of time because of Comic-Con that year.
Ah.
And we'd arranged to get a preview copy of it or whatever electronically. And we had thought we were getting the first issue. So we reviewed it as the first issue. Turns out it was the second issue.
And you just couldn't even tell. It's so accessible.
It's like, well, it jumped right into the story. It started a little quickly, but hey, I knew what was going on. I understood it. You know, it made sense when I read the first issue afterwards. Oh, that's what led to this. Got it. Okay, that makes a little more sense. But it was still coming in completely cold. It worked great.
And with so many writers, that's an impossibility. That you can just pick up the second issue without a recap telling you what's going on and understand, all right, what in the hell's going on here? But I remember that. I love that. And I read another one by him. I can't remember right now. But I have all the Love and Capes. They're just standing in my stack waiting to be read. I really do love him. And looking at the art, I never would have picked up one of his books if you guys didn't review that. So you made me a fan.
Well, but if you've got that kind of solid quality storytelling, the price matters a little less.
Yes, I would agree.
It still matters. Because I think there's also kind of that barrier to entry aspect of, I will sample something if it's cheaper. I'm not going to sample something if I've got to put in, you know, $25 to get the trade or something.
Yeah. I think when the industry, because it's, like we said, it's probably going to happen one day. I hope it's not anytime soon, the $4.99. I'm just hoping for all of our sanity and pocketbooks that they have fewer titles but more impactful titles. I don't need 100 Marvel titles. I don't need, you know, the just glut of stuff that comes out. I want you to give me good stuff. Okay, that's not my genre. I'm not going to read that. But if it's in my genre, it's good material, something that I'm going to want to read with maybe an A-plus writer. Don't just hire people just to fill the shelves, which I feel is what's happening right now.
Well, but I think they also need to write with the expectation that everybody is not reading everything.
Yes.
And that it's the exception case, and I think it's increasingly rare, for somebody to be all in at Marvel or DC.
And yeah, I would agree.
If you don't know, when was the last time I saw this character or what's going on here or what have you? Because that may be one of the things that, since I've cut back, may impact do I get certain new titles or not.
It's true.
There's a new Valkyrie series coming out from Marvel that actually sounds pretty interesting to me, but it's spinning out of War of the Realms that I'm sitting out.
So you might go into it and not have any clue.
So I may pre-order the first issue to give it a shot, but if it's one of those where it feels like it's in the middle of the story because I skipped the event, maybe I won't stay with it.
And there that happened with another one, which was in the event for you, was the Agents of Atlas.
Agents of Atlas and Giant Men.
Giant Men, that was the other one. And so essentially there's kind of lost sales because you have an interested party, you want to read that character, but you don't want to be forced to read the slew of War of the Realms.
I want them to have a shared universe and to leverage that, but I don't want them to do it in a way that I feel is kind of bullying me to read everything.
Yeah.
Because I don't have the time, and at the moment I really don't have the interest.
Well, I understand exactly where you're coming from. Well, I am getting that Agents of Atlas. I'm going to kind of read it, and I'm going to see how much it ties in, and maybe I'll let you know. I mean, at least then you'll know. I'm just curious, how does it tie in, or does it not really tie in? You know, because some things they say they tie in, but they don't. So it depends.
Well, and I think that marketing practice is fundamentally bad because it eliminates the juice of the, oh, it's going to tie in, statements in the solicits.
Yeah, it's true.
We disbelieve, at which point they can't say it when it matters because we won't listen.
That's true. Very, very, very true. So anyways, that's kind of, I figure we talk about it just because people are talking about it on the Slack channel and there's mixed opinions. Some people are like, I'm done with comics, but people have said that at every price increase. I hope it doesn't happen anytime soon. But if it does happen, like I said, I hope it's quality material, maybe an increased page count. If they give you, you know, 28 pages or 32 pages for $4.99 to start you off, and slowly trim back the page count. If the price is too high, I don't know. Maybe it'll make it a little more palatable.
Well, let me toss this other thing out there. I spent a little time on the DC Universe website.
Okay.
And they've added a lot of comics. I've certainly not scavenged to find out everything they've added or anything, but I did a little spot checking.
Okay.
They've got, I believe, the entire original run of Justice League of America.
Wow.
They've got a fair amount of Detective Comics.
Okay.
Not all the way up to, you know, 1,000 or whatever. And I haven't looked for the current Justice League title or whatever to see how far that goes. But, like, one of the things I thought about doing is back issue spotlights is a series on the JLA-JSA crossovers.
Okay.
They're now accessible to anybody who subscribes to DC Universe online.
So somebody who can pay, what is it, $7 now?
Yeah.
For the... Okay, $7, you basically have an unlimited library, that's somewhat organized alphabetically.
It's searchable. You can get to what you need, and it's big. I'm not going to say it's unlimited. It's large. It's surprisingly large.
And they're going to be adding to it, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Like Marvel, eventually, I think everything will be digitized. Everything that they, within copyright law, you know, they probably can't digitize their Red Sonja stuff because they don't have the license to do it. That will be on there. So everything that's not adult will be on there. So like their Epic Illustrated, that magazine they used to have, probably not going to be on there.
could be. Don't know. Everything they can get on there will be on there at some point. DC is now, again, playing catch up, but is on that path. So I think it puts a different spin on the will comics get to $5.99 or something with the they may go to a subscription model online.
Yeah. And then, you know, Marvel or DC, and I think Marvel will be leveraging this more because DC's already has TV shows on theirs. Marvel could, when they roll out the Disney network, you know, streaming service where you have all the Marvel stuff, you have all the Fox stuff, everything, you know, ABC, it's all on there. You know, anytime they can put on a little advertisement for $5, you can have unlimited access to, you know, this reading library.
Is the Disney service going to have all of that? I thought it was going to have the Marvel stuff, Star Wars stuff, Simpsons, and I'm not sure what else.
Oh, I was just imagining they're going to eventually have it all. I have no
clue. Well, they're going to have it all online. I just don't know if it'll be that service. They may do different services.
Oh, just to gouge a little bit more. That sounds like.
But if there's a benefit to getting the DC Plus or whatever, Disney Plus or whatever they're calling it, that has the Marvel Cinematic Universe and getting the Marvel Comics stuff, if they can cross-pollinate, which they should try,
would
make sense. I think DC's approach of getting all their shows and the comics in one place may actually position them better in a few years once they've built up the comic stuff and once if they do decide to kind of close the gap on stuff.
Exactly. I mean, imagine that. You have kids who are or parents who are going to have kids with their tablets watching, you know, maybe Marvel and Disney movies, you know, and then they can pay like a little, you know, $4 upgrade and have comics for their kids. Oh, your kids can actually read the comics. Oh, I want my kid to read. Let's let them read the comics. Yeah, there's a whole market there untapped.
I think it changes the dynamic quite a bit on a number of things. But I think there's also a shakeup to be had in the next couple of years, I don't know, now to 5 years out or whatever, on how many streaming services there are and the pricing structures on them and such, particularly with, I think, Netflix has raised their price. I think YouTube TV has raised their price. There's going to come a point where people have to really pick and choose. And that's with Disney Plus coming online. There's Hulu. There's the Amazon Prime stuff. There's
CBS All Access.
CBS All Access, yeah.
Too many.
There comes a point where it's too expensive, and you know that's where almost a Comixology kind of approach wins out in terms of one-stop shopping. One subscription gets you more, whatever.
Exactly.
So it's going to be interesting to see where it plays out, but I think we're already now at a point where if I had decided, you know what, I'm just going to do this as back issue spotlights or whatever, I could get to where I just had the Marvel subscription for the comics and the DC Universe stuff, and that would give me a fairly wide playing field of what to do back issue spotlights on.
Yeah, it'd be super easy. Anybody who wants to read along, just pay your $5 or $6, $7, whatever it is.
$8.
Yeah, and you have the issues. Boom, there you go.
So, not something I'm going to do at this point, but it's now viable.
Exactly. So, anyways, it makes it easy. I remember when we were doing our back issue thing for episode 600.
Mm-hmm.
I bought some digital issues because I didn't want to go and buy them online. the paper issues, and I didn't want to go dig through my boxes. So I was like, click, I bought it.
There's a lot to be said for the convenience of digital.
Exactly. I'll probably never go back and read that digital issue, but it made my life so much simpler for doing that.
Yeah. So let's see. Coming up, we've got previews coming out tomorrow as we record this. That'll be April 24th, so last Wednesday as this episode goes up. That means the next preview spotlight deadline is Saturday, May 4th, bright and early in the morning. Please send in clips. We had great turnout this last time. One clip per pick, standard rules. There's information on the forum if you have questions, ask. The following Saturday, the 11th of May, 7 p.m. Central Time, is when we're going to be doing the next teleconference. We'll talk about whatever comes up with whoever's online at the time. It's a lot of fun. Hopefully people will join us for that. And that's pretty much what I got.
Ah, cool. Short and sweet. To the point.
Is there anything else? We good.
We're good.
Cool. Just a quick reminder for everybody that this Saturday is Free Comic Book Day, so please go out, support your local comic shop, and enjoy some of the free comics. And keep in mind that Avengers Endgame is coming out, and not everybody's going to rush to the theater and see it the minute it comes out. Matter of fact, as I'm recording this clip right now, on Thursday, April 25th, I believe some people are actually already watching the movie. Now, I'm one of those people who's not going to catch it when it first comes out, because I've still got Captain Marvel to watch, well, and Shazam too, but Captain Marvel of the MCU, and Ant-Man and the Wasp. I'm behind on my movies, it's going to take me a while to catch up, and frankly, a 3-hour-long movie experience, I'm probably going to wait for the Blu-ray, just because it's easier to schedule and record on, and frankly, pause when I need a pit stop in the middle of the movie. 3 hours is a long time. Anyways, keep in mind, not everyone's going to catch this movie when it first comes out. It's a big deal for a lot of people, myself included, because it's 10 years in the making for this thing. Please be considerate of your fellow fans and don't spoil the movie for them. We've got an MCU channel on Slack. That's a great place to go discuss it. It is a spoilers channel. Use that. Please don't use the general channel for that kind of a stuff. It kind of sucks for those of us that are a little behind on our reading and our movie watching and our television stuff. Just because kind of life's gotten in the way and whatnot. If something gets spoiled there, and I know nobody's trying to do it maliciously or anything, but we have a spoilers channel for general type stuff. We've just started up an MCU channel for things like Endgame and the other Marvel stuff specifically. Take advantage of that, enjoy the discussion, but try to limit those discussions with spoilers to people who've already seen the movie. It's just the polite thing to do. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. Join us next week as we discuss Batgirl number 34 from DC, Ironheart number 5 from Marvel, and Star Trek Year 5 number 1 from IDW.